So I'll be talking about recombination rates in apple and how we observe differences between individuals and how that can lead to practical breeding applications. So I'll first briefly mention why we should all care about recombination and recombination rate. I'll briefly talk about what material and analysis I did, and then I'll talk about the actual recombination rates in apple and how that can lead to breeding applications. So if we think about apple breeding or any fruit breeding, the goal is to get new and superior cultivars with better qualities. For example, recently developed Cosmic Crisp at Washington State University is an example of an apple with better qualities. And so if you look at it from a genetic point of view, it's creating new individuals that have improved combinations of genetic factors or alleles, and not just any alleles that control key horticultural traits. And so in the infographic here, if you look at two parents that are heterozygous and have a good allele and a bad allele, then the goal would be to get offspring with that are homozygous for the good allele. Now, if there's plenty of traits that breeders select for, and these traits are controlled by various regions in the genome, and these genomes are regularly linked to each other, so they're on the same chromosome. And examples of that are the QTL hotspots, in which where a small region controls several traits. For example, in apple, we have Christmas and bitter pit that are on chromosome 16, and so, for example, in Honeycrisp, the ultra crispness of Honeycrisp is linked to a higher bitter pit incidence. Another example is when we look at integration of disease resistance. So often when we look for new disease-resistant alleles, we'll go to wild individuals, but they often have lower fruit quality. So as we're getting that disease resistance, we're often getting a few generations backwards in as for fruit quality. So the favorable and or unfavorable alleles are often linked, and that can be positive or negative. In this example, where we have a parent where two regions are linked to each other, parent one has two positive alleles for two traits or two regions, and they will be often inherited together. But then for the other parent, we have a negative allele linked to a positive allele for one locus, and the other way around for the second locus. And so that means that if we want to get, it's going to be really hard to get both good alleles from that second parent. But luckily, there is a thing that is called recombinations, in which that linkage can be broken. And so in the example before, or here for this parent here, where the two positive ones are not on the same homolog, recombination can lead to a new offspring in which the two positive alleles are on the same homolog. Obviously, the other way around can happen too, and we would rather not have that. But so far, there's been very little description about how often recombination occurs in apple or in many other plants. So the main goal of when I started doing this was to just look at the recombination rate in apple, and then further on look if there are if we can find differences. So the material I used for that is a highly pedigreed material, which means that we have a lot of important parents, but we also have their offspring, and it's not just a single full SIP cross, but these parents are also, there's a multiple crosses, so these individuals are often parent of multiple combinations. And so that will allow us to go through generations, look which chromosome parts are inherited, and thus trace recombination events. Now we also need genotypic data, and for that I used the 8K SNP array, and that data was highly curated, so it wasn't just taken off as it comes up from the software. Instead, it went through a whole workflow or pipeline to get all the errors, genotyping errors, out of it. That pipeline has been described in a recently published paper that was published in PLOS One, and there are also webinars on YouTube that explain the whole workflow. But that means that we have very reliable data, and so we can be very sure of what we see. Then, when looking at overall recombination rate, to ensure that I very positive which alleles are linked together on which homolog. I use only individuals that have at least 5 offspring, because that allows for proper facing, which meant that I had could look at 57 parents, and in total they represented 2,273 gametes. Then, as I was doing that, I started also finding differences between parents, and so I wanted to compare parents or individuals and their recombination rate. And for but to make sure that I could properly see differences in that were just not artifacts of low sample size, I only compared individuals that had enough offspring or had produced enough gametes. And so for that I ended up having 43 parents represented by over 2,100 gametes. So as for results, looking at the overall recombination rate in apple, I found that on average there are 10.7 recombinations occurring during gamete formation, and for those who are not familiar with apple, apple has 17 chromosomes. So also in this histogram we see that most of the number of recombinations observed per gamete are below that 17 chromosome number, which means that for most of the gametes formed there will be at least one chromosome that didn't undergo any recombination event. Now if you look at the chromosome level, then I can see that in about 45% of all the inherited chromosomes there was no recombination that occurred, and that for about another 45 to 50% there is one recombination, and there's only a very few chromosomes for which two or more recombinations occurred. Obviously that will also depend on the chromosome length, how many chromosomes, how many recombinations occurred. And then because we have all these statistics per chromosome, we can also estimate the actual length, genetic length of the chromosomes, and compare that to what has been published. And so that's been shown in this graph here, where the red line is the chromosome lengths of a published map by DPR et al., which is a very good map that has been used an integrated map with multiple full SIP families, has become kind of the standard for us. And the blue line is the estimated length based on the recombinations that we observed in our data set. And so you can see that on average, the length is about 11 centimorgans smaller than what is published, which is indicated by that gray dotted line. Now we also see that there, for some chromosomes, the length was more or less the same, and that for others, the discrepancy is actually even larger. Now, we think that some of these that this difference might be partially because of errors in the mapping data set, in genotypic errors. So as I said before, our data has been highly curated, and often that's not done to that level. And if you even a single error can already lead to a double recombination, which do explain why that genotype is suddenly observed. So that would add two recombinations, which then adds to the length of the map. The other issue might be that the published map was made from merging a lot of full SIP maps, and so inconsistencies between those maps might artificially enlarge the chromosome. Now, sorry, as I was looking at these ones that have two or three recombinations on the chromosome, I went to check to make sure that those high number of recombinations were not due to errors. And when I was checking that, I noticed that I was often checking very specific individuals, that certain parents occurred more often, had more often a high number of recombinations. So I started wondering, is there a difference between parents in how often their gametes recombine? And then looking at several individuals, I did find that yes, there is a difference in the number of recombinations per gamete for different parents. For example, Gala is on the lower spectrum with on average about 9 recombinations per gamete, whereas Pink Lady is on the high spectrum with about 16 recombinations per gamete. So there is definitely a difference between parents, and that has made us thinking that this could actually be very beneficial, or it could lead to breeding applications. For instance, if we're looking at those QTL hotspots that I mentioned earlier, if we take this hotspot where that is controlling 3 different traits, in this case, let's say firmness, size, and bitter pit incidence, If we have a few parents that look like this, where all positive alleles are on one homolog and all negative alleles are on the other homolog, then we would like to keep it that way for the next generation. So in that case, what we want to use is, if we have a choice, use a parent that has a low recombination background so that we can keep all these alleles together. Obviously, if it's in the other example where positive and negative alleles are linked on the one homolog, then we want to rearrange that, we want to reshuffle that so that we get all the good alleles on a single homolog. So in that case, we would like to use, it would be beneficial to use a parent that has a high recombination background so that we have more chance of finding that one seedling which gets all these good alleles together on a single homolog. Another implication could be in introgression, where, as I said before, we're trying to get this one positive allele, in most cases a disease resistance allele, from a wild source, but otherwise we would want to get rid of all the other wild stuff often as fast as possible, because it's often negatively influencing our fruit traits. So obviously, if you make a cross between the wild and the elite, the first generation will be half wild and half elite, and there's not much you can do about it. But then going to the next generations, so you want to get rid of that wild stuff, these wild alleles, as fast as possible. So for any chromosome that is not carrying the disease resistance or the allele that you want to, you just want to get all elite. You don't want to keep any of that wild material there. So for those chromosomes, you would like to have the low recombination background or low recombination, so you can just pass on the elite chromosome in full to the next generation. Now, for the chromosomes with the region to be integrated, which is denoted with the star here, you might think we might want to have a high recombination right at the start so that we can really make that region small and get rid of all the rest. But if we start off with a high recombination rate, we get into the risk that actually there's multiple small wild fragments get incorporated in our elite material, which then will be harder to get rid of. So this is not really what we want. For the chromosomes carrying the region, we want to start off with a smaller, lower recombination rate so that we can first trim that down a bit, and then as we get further down, we want to get a higher recombination rate so that we can have more chance of really getting to a small region around the allele of interest or the locus of interest. Now, there's a lot that still needs to be done. These data, curated data sets that are really new, that we were one of the first that have these, and so there's a lot of more biological discoveries that can be done, and especially and also for recombination. So one of the questions I'm still looking into is, are there other factors that influence recombination? For instance, does it matter if we use an individual as a mother or a father? It might be that have different recombination rates. Then, of course, are these differences in recombination rates heritable? Because that will really determine how well we can use all these strategies that I just mentioned, and how well is that passed on to the next generation. And if it's passed on to the next generation, what are these loci? What are the regions in the genome that are controlling this? So to conclude, the results that I got is that on average, every chromosome had zero or one recombination most of the time, and so there were, and the total recombination rate in apple, or the average recombination rate in apple is about 11 recombinations per gamete. We did see differences between individuals, which then can lead to practical breeding applications, but we still need to do a lot more research to get a better understanding of this. And I would like to thank Royce Breed for the opportunity to do all this research, and then I open the floor for questions. Hey.
In cases where you have more than two or three recombinations of chromosomes.
Yes.
Did you see a trend where it was specific chromosomes or regions on the chromosome? Did you look to see if there were strands?
So the question was if I found more than one or two recombinations, if I saw specific trends based on chromosome or regions. So one obvious trend was that chromosome 15, which is longer and much longer than everything else, had more often had these higher number of recombinations, but I didn't, as far as I know, I haven't, didn't really see specific regions that were involved in a higher recombination rate. Yeah.
Is your low recombination rate a very low recombination rate? Because meiosis works best when there's recombination to each chromosome. Is your recombination data that you've looked at corroborated by cytogenetic data?
I'm sorry?
Is the recombination rate that you have observed corroborated by any cytogenetic data? Is there, has there been any evaluation of meiosis
I'm not sure if I fully understand the question.
For chiasma formation.
Yeah. Recombination is a function of chiasma formation and meiosis. And this would suggest that there's either low chiasma formation or something like a lot of inversion might account for it as well. I was just wondering if there's any cytogenetic or just more larger physical type of an evaluation to corroborate the results of the combination that rate that you recover. If you're recovering the recovery, if you're recording the recovery, there's a lot of recombination that's going on that doesn't seem to viable damage, but which is a whole other issue. I don't distrust the data, it's just that it's surprising.
Right. It's a good question, and I don't really know the answer. I would.
Somebody must have looked at meiosis and mapped it on something. But it'd just be, it'd be interesting to go along with the, what you're looking at, because it's interesting. To me, this is something like a very low recombination rate that you've got.
Right. Well, I don't know all numbers, but I think that when we looked in, for example, cherry, which is relatively related to apple, we also saw relatively low numbers. So it.
I had a similar thought. I was wondering, you know, why would the lost band employees and you know, it's over, and I'm just kind of briefly, but maybe the employees all wash out, you know, that might be.
So, yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, a lot of inversions for transportation, I think, flush out.
Regarding to aneuploids, I do know that in that data set that we had about 4 or 5 aneuploids. I mean, that were not used in this specific, for this specific study, but it's part of a larger study, and we did find a few, but not a lot. And I think we found one also where there was a larger segmental aneuploid where, but it's not like. The data, it wasn't, because it's more than 1,000 individuals, and it's not like it's very prevalent there.
Thanks, Dan. So that concludes our session. I know that at, like, about right now, there's a keynote address starting. About hemp research. So if you're interested in that, you can go check that out. Thank you for coming.